Yesterday we spoke. Did you work today?
No. You worked last night.
Late? All night?
Last night, yeah. All night.
And tonight?
Was a bit.
And tonight?
No.
Okay. So Krishna had just described the amazing position of someone whose consciousness is focused on him while working. He's called that process Buddhi Yoga, the process of engaging in Krishna's service or engaging in through one's intelligence, with one's intelligence separated from the fruit of one's work, just either dutifully working or working with full detachment from the results, up to the level of working with great love for Krishna, but detached from the externals of one's activities. So all these would be considered in Buddhi Yoga, but ultimately Buddhi Yoga, the highest intellectual process of combining with Krishna, is the process by which one is fully focused on him in devotional service. And being fully focused on Krishna in devotional service through love for Krishna is the most powerful of all kinds of absorptions in Krishna. And this is the process of devotional service, is ultimately an absorption of the consciousness in the pleasure of trying to please Krishna. So when one is doing that, and this is the perfection of buddhi, the perfection of intelligence, the perfection of yoga, full absorption in thoughts of Krishna and trying to please him in an active way. And the external activity is based on the internal desire to please him. That is a very deep kind of absorption. Now Arjuna, he will ask in text 54, because Krishna has described it so completely, it's so powerfully in the last section. And Krishna has also explained that one shouldn't follow the Vedic formulas which elevate one to higher planets with a desire to gain something on the material level. Rather, one can follow them, but not pay heed to the results that are placed in front of one's consciousness. That if you do this, you're going to get this, and you're going to really benefit in this way, and you'll get, your enemies will be defeated, you'll gain this mystic perfection, you'll end up at the heavenly planets in Swargaloka, and therefore you perform this Vedic ceremony. So Krishna spoke very strongly against that in the previous chapter, saying don't be bewildered, even though this is Vedic, even though it's coming from Shastra, still you should understand the ultimate purpose of the 96,000 or 96,100,000 of Vedic verses. The ultimate purpose of all these is that knowledge, true knowledge, blossoms in one's consciousness. It's not to have a spirit of enjoyment. So those lures that attract one for personal sense enjoyment, these are to be given up. One should ignore those. not be bewildered. So when someone may say, well, this is Shastra, this is scripture, you have to follow the scriptures. But and in fact, there's a very powerful Acharya who lived around the, I think during the time of Shankaracharya, which is maybe, I can't remember how many years ago, 1500 years ago or so. His name was Komarila Bhatta, and he was a follower of what we would call Karma Mimamsa philosophy, where very, very strictly following every Vedic sacrifice, every prescribed duty, for the purpose of gaining piety and good karma. And they say this, and he, as a Karma Mimamsa follower, described that this was the perfection. This is also propagated by Jaimini Rishi. This is the perfection, to continuously gain good karma so that you can forever be in the material world in pious situations. But this is not what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. He says the purpose of the Vedas, Vedas Chasavaraham Eva Vidyo, to know me, to focus your consciousness on me, to be, for our consciousness to be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So when one's consciousness is absorbed internally on Krishna, this is called Buddhi Yoga. This is Buddhi Yoga in its perfectional state. So now Arjuna, after hearing the full absorption in of a person in Buddhi Yoga, he asked some questions in text 54. He said to Arjuna, says to Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged and transcended? It's an interesting concept that consciousness is merged in transcendence. That means that there is a homogeneity between the consciousness and the object. So one is actually associating with Krishna. One is actually in the presence of Krishna, with Krishna, if one is Krishna conscious, if one is absorbed in him. So what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? What are his symptoms? How does he speak? How can we recognize, perceive such a person? And what is his language? What does he say? What does he speak about? And how does he sit? How does he walk? So Prabhupada in his purport explains there are symptoms for everything. For every person, there'll be a symptom. You know, if someone is wealthy, there are symptoms for that. If someone's diseased, Prabhupada explains, there are symptoms. A learned man has symptoms. And similarly, Prabhupada explains, a man in transcendental consciousness of Krishna has specific symptoms for his various dealings. So the Bhagavad Gita is going to now describe the symptoms. But according to our acharyas, it's a little esoteric, because the question of, for instance, what are his symptoms? How does he speak? How does someone speak? What does that mean? If I ask you, how does a person speak? It's not easy to answer that question. It has to be a little more direct about what you mean. How does he speak? Does he speak? What language does he speak? Does he speak sweetly? Does he speak continuously? Does he speak just a few words? Does he speak long, long sentences? Does he use metaphors and similes as in speech? So the acharyas reveal what Arjuna exactly means, and that will make us understanding his Krishna's answers better. So what are the symptoms, and how? That's the first question. What are his symptoms? In other words, what does he do that reveals his situation in transcendence? That he's actually so focused on Krishna. What does he do that reveals that he's actually focused on Krishna? Because anyone can say, like, I remember looking at this book by this gentleman who was a very famous and powerful impersonalist. And the impersonalist, a follower of Ramana Maharshi, who seemed to have been in general a genuine impersonalist, powerful. So he was a follower of him, and the followers of this person have very much popular in the West. So anyway, one time he was in his home somewhere in the Punjab. He was Punjabi, and everyone used to come to his house for satsang once a week, and they would basically just sit. And the impersonalists have a way of making the atmosphere sort of deep and low, and everyone talks, and everyone just, their minds slow down. That's the basic process that these meditators, and also like the Vipassana meditation, the Buddhistic meditation, they slow down the mind and stop its running around in the mode of passion. And if you can do that without falling asleep, keep it from the mode of ignorance, the mind will go to goodness, and from Satvam Sanjaya, take Jnanam, and from goodness, actual knowledge develops. One can actually, when the mind slows down, one can actually perceive oneself as different from the body and things like that. So anyway, the impersonalist was doing that. So, and people would come to his house every week for satsang, they would call it. And then one week, and you really have to know what India and Indians are like to appreciate the great strife that entered his heart. That one day, at the same time he was supposed to have the sadhu sangha, the satsang, there was a cricket match between India and Pakistan. Now, I don't know if you can imagine how much, what this brings out in the people of India and the people of Pakistan. Are you aware of these things? Huh? They are really completely passionate. And it's better that they do that than bomb Pakistan, which is probably what most of them would prefer to do. But in any case, so what would he do? The cricket match is on at the same time as the satsanga. So obviously what he would do is keep the television on and have the satsanga at the same time while they're watching the cricket match. So they would sit quietly. So many of the people came in and they saw that their teacher was watching the cricket match and everything. And they became very discouraged, and they walked out. And his response was, they do not understand the actual meaning of satsang. I also couldn't quite understand the actual meaning of satsang from that. But in any case, when Krishna is going to describe the symptoms of someone fixed in transcendence, he's not going to describe the need to watch Indian-Pakistan cricket match. He's not going to mention this, because the person who is merged in transcendence, he doesn't consider himself his body. He's fixed in his actual identity, his spiritual identity, his eternal identity. So therefore he doesn't consider himself Indian or Pakistani or anything, so therefore he doesn't actually care who wins the cricket match. Or to speak of seeing, because his consciousness is focused in eternity, so what to speak of valuing taking a piece of wood and hitting a ball with it and getting a 6 or 4, a lot. In eternity, it doesn't mean very much. So in any case, Krishna is going to give the actual symptoms of some, how does he reveal his position? So he answers this this is called the sthita prajna, the one who is fixed in transcendence. Sthita means fixed. So he's going to answer him in text 55, what are the symptoms of such a person? And then in 56 he's going to begin, how does he speak? Because that was one of the questions that Arjuna asked. So what are his symptoms? Oh Partha, the Supreme Person, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, oh Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desires of desire for sense gratification, his mind is so fixed in transcendence, it's not that he has to struggle. Oh, I shouldn't do this. I want it, but no, I will be strong and not think about these things. But no, he gives up all varieties of desire. So desire exists on the level of the mind. So in his mind, there exists no desire for combining the senses and the sense objects. No desire at all. He's given it up. And later on, Krishna will explain where this ability to give up the desire for sense gratification comes from. What to speak, and also how to not engage in sense gratification if one does have desires, and still be fixed. So when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, savanpata manogatan, that means the desires for sense gratification arise in the mind. There is no actual relationship. There's also in the Bhagavatam, there's this amazing chapter called When the Hansa Avatar Comes and speaks to the four Kumaras and Lord Brahma about the Absolute Truth. But the description that he gives is that the senses actually enter into the sense objects. And the sense objects the mind actually enters into the sense objects, and the sense objects enter into the mind. And this is why it's so difficult to keep one's mind free from the desires of sense enjoyment, because these objects actually enter subtly, subtly into the mind. We perceive them in our minds. So you can't make an actual distinction between you or the sense objects and the sense objects, because there's a connection. They are in you, and you are in them. You can't say, well, here's this piece of wood, and here I am, and we're completely separate. It's very, very, very interesting. It actually is very much like quantum physics. There are points in quantum physics that resonate in this. But you can't say, and therefore, you can't say that this is a piece of wood and it doesn't have anything to do with me, because by my perception of it, my consciousness enters into it. And this is why when different people look at a sense object, they'll see different things, because they're not only seeing the object, they're seeing their own minds in there. So we don't really see with our eyes. Again, we see with our minds. And when a mind becomes habituated, gets in the habit of enjoying a particular thing, then he projects something from his own mind on that thing, and sees that thing as suitable for his enjoyment, when actually he's a soul and he has nothing to do with it. So the point being that he gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification which arise from mental concoction. It's just his mind grasping at an object, thinking that it's going to give him pleasure and sense gratification. And this doesn't work because he is not the mind. So the sthita prajna, he withdraws his consciousness. And this is specifically his practice. He withdraws his consciousness from the external sense objects, from the material world, practically speaking, and he has his consciousness focused within, on Krishna. Or his focusing his consciousness on Krishna allows him to see Krishna manifest everywhere. This is exalted consciousness, because Krishna is not just the Ishwara, the Parameshwara, the controller. He is the absolute truth, which means there's nothing separate from him. That means that in the material world, it's Mama Angsateza Sambhavad, is all expansions of his energy. So the sthita prajna is so fixed internally on Krishna that when he looks outward, he sees Krishna. Just like if Sri Radharaman is driving. What color is Radharaman's, the van that he drives?
Gray.
Huh?
Gray.
Gray or silver. Does it have a roof rack?
I think so.
Does it? No, sorry. That was a different van. But when you see Radharaman's van coming, if you see it every day, everything, you say, oh, there's Radharaman. But actually, it's not Radharaman that you're seeing. It's something external to him. But because of the relationship between the person and the van, you see the person when you see the van. So similarly, someone who has love for Krishna has a relationship with Krishna. When he sees anything of this world, anything at all, he sees it in relationship to Krishna, and he sees Krishna in it. That is, it's bhavana. It's a matter of his mood is like that. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena. Because his eyes are smeared with prema, he sees Krishna everywhere. It's the mood of the residents of Vrindavan when they see the Yamuna, they think of Krishna. When they see the birds, they think of Krishna. When they see demigods and demigoddesses, when they see cows, when they see that hill, which is known as Govardhan, when they see the deer, when they see the Adivasis there, when they see the everything, they just see Krishna. Because they see everything in relationship, and everything does have a relationship with Krishna. Everything that exists and doesn't exist has a relationship with Krishna, because he's the Param Satyam, the Absolute Truth. So, it says that sthita prajna gives up all variety of desire for sense gratification, which arises from mental concoction. It's not there. It's in the mind. And when his mind that's purified by his focus on the Absolute Truth, when his mind finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So what is the self? The self is Krishna's servant. Mama eva amsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanata. So he, and this will be described in a later verse. That 59th verse perhaps, that he's getting so much pleasure from being a soul in relationship with Krishna, from being himself in relationship with Krishna, there, and so he's not struggling to pull his mind back from the objects of the senses and making the attempt to exploit them for his own pleasure. It's not an effort for him, because he's directly experiencing the sweet relationship of the soul connected with Krishna. So that is pure Krishna consciousness. So what is the symptom of a person who's svita pragya, which is Arjuna's question? What is the first symptom? He gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction out of his mind. This is where the desires sit in the mind. Sometimes we make believe, oh, they're not there, I'm so exalted, and we throw them back there in the back of our consciousness. But then if we don't come to the point of tasting the sweetest part of our existence, then these desires will come back and knock us over, so to speak. So this is how he reveals his position, by actually being focused within and experiencing pleasure within, and therefore his consciousness is withdrawn from the objects of the senses, and he sees the world just like the Mahabhagavata. When he looks at the world, he sees his own bhavana. What does bhavana mean? Or mood. He sees his own mood. Whatever is his consciousness, he sees that. Wherever he looks, he sees everyone as serving Krishna, because that's his consciousness. So similarly, we will see according to our consciousness. The desires that fill our consciousness, well, when we look at the external world, we'll see in that way. And I've mentioned this many times before, but it's like when if you're looking for a new car or a new computer or a new MP3 player, it's so amazing, or a new anything, if it's in your mind, the desire to buy something. Wherever you look, you'll see more and more of those. Everywhere. Or if you're looking to buy a house, you'll see houses for sale everywhere. And there are houses for sale everywhere, but there's everything else also. But you see according to your mind, according to your own mood. So the svita pragya, because his mood is so internally fixed and pure and is withdrawn, he's experiencing so much happiness, and therefore he has the capacity to be free from material life. So the next question in 6 will answer the question, the next answer rather. The first answer was, what are his symptoms? Excuse me, the first question was, what are his symptoms? What's the answer to that question? What were his symptoms? And his mind finds pleasure in the self alone. Means the self means his relationship with Krishna. What a wonderful state of consciousness. Purely natural for the soul too. Then, if he's like that, he is svita pragya, he is fixed, he is in pure transcendental consciousness, if he has that symptom. Now the next one is, how does he speak? So this is described in the next 2 verses. And the acharyas explain more of what Arjuna means by asking, how does he speak? He means that how his mentality and words are affected by anger, affection, or the neutrality of others. How much are his words and mind affected by the emotions that affect everyone else's mind? If someone says something to you you don't like, and you become angry, is that going to happen to the, is the sthita pragya, the sthita dhimuni, also going to be affected by externals? And of course, he won't be. But here is how Krishna answers in these two verses. One who is not disturbed in mind, because the question again is about speech, but the speech reflects the mind, usually. And he's going to describe the mentality, because the speech will be come out of the mentality. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, because his mind is fixed, his consciousness is fixed on Krishna, and everything else arising from the three modes of material nature, or his fate, or his karma, it's all very, very insignificant. Because his internal experience is so great. And this can't be imitated. You can't say, from now on, I will not be disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries. I will not be elated when there's happiness. I will be free from attachment, fear, and anger. We can say it 100 times, 100 times an hour. And it won't happen unless we are actually sages, the sthita dhimunis, fixed in consciousness on the absolute truth, steadily so. The sthita means the steadily. And again, that consciousness comes from the higher taste, and that will be explained quite soon. In text 59, Vishyavani Vatente. You know that verse? Vishyavani Vatente, Nirana Sijayana, Sovar Jarma Sopyasya Param Visvala Vatente. These things aren't intellectual adjustments. From now on, I'm going to be like this. Oh, it comes from depths of the soul's finding pleasure in his relationship with Krishna, his internal relationship with Krishna. So one who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, dukesho anudvigna mana, sukesho vigata spriha, Vita raga baya krodha, free from attachment, fear, and anger, sthita dhimuni uchate. Such a sage is called a sthita dhimuni, internally fixed. So when someone speaks to him in an angry way, or some misery hits him according to the modes of material nature, or his fate, or something wonderful happens to him, it doesn't pull him out of his eternal, internal relationship with Krishna, loving. He's so fixed. He is called the sage of steady mind. And the next verse also describes such a sage. How does he speak? In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So these are the, it doesn't touch him. How did you do on your exam, by the way? Yesterday, yeah? Yeah. You must be really relieved that it's over, yeah?
No.
No. You have sthita dhimuni, yeah? Yes? See? So he doesn't, so I'm fixed.
It's still like normal school.
Were you in an anxiety before the exam?
No.
See? Sthita dhimuni. Were you thinking about Krishna continuously?
Not
sthita dhimuni. Next time you have another chance. Huh?
Krishna will give the chance.
Yes, thank you. We are dependent on His mercy and Him always giving us a chance. One, let's see in this material world, just see how exalted this consciousness is. One who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may attain according to his faith. Good things happen to us, bad things, but it doesn't touch the person or the depth of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. Neither praising it nor despising it, such a sage is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Now, 58. How does he sit? Means, what is his mentality when his senses are restrained from their objects? That is how the acharyas explain what this means. Because sometimes if you're in a room and the doors are locked and there's nothing to do and there's no internet connection and you don't have a something to play with, it can be very, very disturbing. So when the Sthitadhyayi Muni is sitting, meaning he's not engaging his senses, what is going on inside of him? What is his mentality like? From 58 to 63, how many verses is that?
58
to 63. Hope it wasn't the mathematics examination that you had. That's why God gave us fingers, by the way. 58, 59, 60, 61, 62. Whoops. One who is able to withdraw. Now here's the answer. What does he do when his senses are not engaged? What is his mentality like? One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects, as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. He uses his senses only as he requires to use them. And for a devotee, Sthitadhyayi Muni, it means that he only uses his senses to please Krishna. That means he only uses his body for Krishna's pleasure. And he's not disturbed by that. Rather, he feels the greatest happiness in that consciousness by acting in that way. Because his consciousness is focused so completely within, and how he can do it is described in the next verse. Because he has the higher taste. Vishya vinivartante nirharasya dehina rasavarjam visopyasya param visvanavartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. Sometimes people they're in a situation and they can't get the things they usually can get and usually do get for their sense pleasure, and they become so disturbed and so agitated. But is that the situation of the Sthitadhyayi Muni who's not engaging his senses? And the answer is no. But ceasing such engagements, so he's not engaging his senses for pleasure, by experiencing a higher taste, param visvanavartate. By the power of his higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. What he is experiencing is so much sweeter than the enjoyments that come from combining the senses and the sense objects. Even though the senses aren't combined with the sense objects, he's fixed in consciousness. Because he's so deeply satisfied. So this consciousness is extraordinary. Because ordinary consciousness, people are they can't do what they want to do, and it's like prison. That's why prison is so terrible. Prabhupada, once when he was in Russia, actually, he was, and they wouldn't allow you to go out of the hotel in those days. There was so little freedom because you were a foreigner. You couldn't go out without an escort. You couldn't look around and see what was going on and things like that. So Prabhupada said that I may not want to go out, but as soon as you say I can't go out, then it becomes like prison, torture, like hell. So when a person is restricted, usually it's like torture for them. But how about the Sthita Dhyamuni? No, because nothing can touch his internal ability to access his relationship with the Supreme Lord. So every situation is wonderful for him, regardless of what's happening externally. Because of the higher taste that comes from that. So Visya Minivartam Te Nidharasi Deinam Visovasam Visopasya Param Visvinivartate. Because of the superior, by experiencing glista, seeing or experiencing Nivartate, he ceases from the external, the inferior. So this is actually the process of becoming fixed and detached from the material realm, is by deeply experiencing the spiritual. And if you try to just become detached from the world of matter without experiencing deep internal pleasure and satisfaction, do you think it's possible to be successful in your detachment? And the answer is no. Because this is the great fault in the process of yoga, Ashtanga yoga, Jnana yoga, Sankhya yoga, because you're doing everything by your own strength. You're withdrawing from the material world by your own power, and you practice making your mind stronger. You perform austerities in the summer. You put fires around you, and the fire of the sun is above you, and your mind is telling you, get out of here, it's so hot. But you make your mind strong, and this is one of the main reasons why these sadhus and yogis perform austerities, because the mind is telling you, don't do this, and do that, and you just learn to ignore it. Become so fixed and strong. But however fixed, and in the winter, they perform tapasya by going into freezing cold water up to the neck and staying there in the winter. One time I asked one of these in India, he was one of these sadhus who performed many different austerities to get tantric siddhis. I asked him, was it difficult for him to perform your austerities? And he said, for one who is born to perform tapasya, it is not difficult. Because you're doing everything by the strength of your own mind. And these people are famous always for becoming so angry when they don't get what they want, like the Vasamuni. It's a little thing. What? False ego. Because the higher taste isn't there to the depth of to the depths of who they are, and to become firmly, completely, fully fixed. One needs the higher taste of an awakened relationship with Krishna. Then Maya pays her obeisances and leaves. What do you think about that?
Good.
Yeah. Really good. Did Krishna explain? He has to explain this. He said he's going to criticize the jnanis who give up work and just act as if detached, but they're not. But they're going on the strength of their own potency rather than on the higher taste of their relationship with Krishna, which is very, very dangerous, always dangerous. So then Krishna explains, the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna. What does impetuous mean? Yeah, impulsive, like they just act. You might not need to eat, but the tongue says, I want something. I want to eat a
cake.
Yes. But I just ate too much. Get me the cake now. Obey me. Obey your tongue. Yes, Prabhu. The senses are so strong and whimsical, impetuous, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of a man of discrimination. That's the jnani. The jnanis are famous for their discrimination. This is this and this is that. That's what Sankhya Yoga and Jnana Yoga is, to discriminate. They place their consciousness, their intellectual capacities, and they're always examining their own consciousness to see the difference between who they are and what is not them in their consciousness. So the senses, however, are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So don't try to be renounced. You should perform internal renunciation by focusing your mind on the Supreme Absolute Truth, and therefore perform Buddhi Yoga, the combination of work with focused intelligence on the Supreme Absolute Truth. That's what Krishna means by Buddhi Yoga, which is ultimately Bhakti Yoga. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. So here Krishna directly describes what this perfection of consciousness is. Matpara tani savarni samyamya yukta asita matpara vase hi yas yasendriyani tasya pragya patisthitaha. That matpara means the senses to be engaged, matpara, in relationship with me. Everything, that's Krishna consciousness, that everything seen and done in relationship with Krishna. Because everything has a relationship with Krishna. There is nothing external outside of Krishna. Because he is the all-inclusive absolute truth. So to see something as if it's separate from Krishna is the action of Maya. Krishna explains this to Lord Brahma. The second of the verses, yata vaso yata tamaha. And the second of the chatusloki verses of the Bhagavatam. Yate ritanya prati dana prati tachapmini yad vidvan napayom. Yata vaso yata tamaha. It's like the reflection of light in a darkened room. It's not coming from the object itself, it's coming from external. The light is coming from outside. So similarly, everything is coming from the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna. And to see anything as if it is separate from that Absolute Truth is the action of Maya. And that Maya makes us see things inaccurately. And it is that Maya that has to be removed. And how to remove the Maya? Huh? Yeah, try it. Let's see if it works.
There's a lot coming out.
Put your hand like this. Hold tight like this. Now pull. There's a lot. And it's not coming out. Okay, so how to get free from Maya's grip?
Krishna Sri Sam.
How else? Any other thoughts on this?
Ignore your mind.
And by what strength will you do that? By your willpower? You should try it. You make a scientific experiment. For the next 2 days, I will not listen to anything my mind says unless it says to chant Hare Krishna. The mind is so powerful. Whew.
It's a question of association. You are dissociating the mind. Do you have a bit? Do you have some other association?
Yeah, I mean, there's many things that can be said on this. Krishna Surya Sam. What else? Keshava Gopabhu. Always chant. But ultimately, when Krishna is pleased, then the material energy will stop bothering the person. The ultimate, therefore, the whole object is to act in such a way that Krishna is pleased. But the tricky thing is that if we act in such a way that Krishna is pleased, being motivated by the desire to for Krishna to stop Maya from bothering us, then Krishna isn't pleased. Because what pleases Krishna? Bhakti, devotion, loving service, the affection of the devotee for him. Then he actually becomes conquered by that. By that devotee. Controlled. Like he's controlled by Arjuna. He's acting as a chariot driver of Arjuna here. And then there's the nice verse in the first canto of Bhagavatam. It says that if we become eager to hear the Bhagavatam, Sundatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravan Kirt, but yet the soul from within the heart, Krishna will he himself will remove all the inauspiciousness.
Yeah, I read that to them.
Really?
Okay.
What book?
Is
that verse Simbatam Svakata Krishna? You can look. You're reading the introduction of Bhagavad Gita this morning? Oh, how nice. Do you read every day? Oh, how nice. You'll continue? Are you determined? So one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and who and fixes his consciousness upon me. So not engaging the senses in material activities, restraining them, but keeping the consciousness focused upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. And if one doesn't do that, restrain his senses, what happens? Dhyayato vishaya punksan. And restraining the senses means if one allows one's mind to dwell on the objects of the senses, it's so dangerous. If one contemplates using, not like the Sthitati Muni who uses his senses like a tortoise, uses them whenever he requires and otherwise he just pulls them back. But if one doesn't do that and meditates on the objects of the senses, jayato visya pungsan sangaste jopa jayate, while contemplating the objects of the senses, this is what happens when we think about the objects of the senses. A person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops. I want to enjoy it. And from lust, anger arises. I want to enjoy it, and then I become angry. Playing with the mode of passion brings us to the point of ignorance. But it doesn't end there. And then from anger, complete delusion arises. We lose track of what's real and what's not real. And we think of things that are not real as real. And from delusion, bewilderment of memory, we forget everything. And when memory is bewildered, because say if you touch a fire, or actually when I was staying in Gita Nagari, there was one of the devotees who, they used to have these wires that run around the farm that are electrical. For the purpose of, what purpose do they do that? To keep the cows in, yeah. So the animals, because the cows are always pushing the edges of the container where they can go to the field. So they have these electric wires that go around it. So the problem is that if you're in the field, you don't, and all the electrical wires aren't running at once. So how do you find out if you're in a field and you want to find out if you can put the cows in there? And you want to find out if the electric wire is electrified or it's turned off or not. So what do?
Touch it.
Yeah, that's what everyone does. So you touch it. I mean, but it's not like it's low voltage and alternating current. So you touch it. Have you ever done that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's what you do. And then what happens?
You get
a chuck and you pull your hand away, it's over, and then you do it again. But this one devotee who used to do that, otherwise there's no other way to find out, practically speaking. But this one devotee said that after a while, you just couldn't touch it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind would refuse to allow you to touch it. It just said no. Because the mind remembers. But when one is deluded enough, confused enough, then all one's memory becomes bewildered. Because our consciousness contains so many memories of misery and failed attempts for pleasure. But if by the power of this sequence, contemplating the objects of the senses, then the desire, attachment, desire, then anger, bewilderment of memory, and then we keep touching the fence and getting shocked again and again and again and again and again. And when memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. And thus engages in material activity. So this is not the Sthitati Muni. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through the regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So a contrast is set up between someone who contemplates the objects of the senses and a person who is free from them, who controls his senses, who controls his mind, who is internally and deeply meditating on Krishna, free from attachment and aversion. Later on, the principles of attachment and aversion are described as that which bewilders the living entity. I want this, I don't want that. And our whole life becomes controlled by all the things I do want and I don't want, and our whole life is run by these things to the moment of our death. Mohina, they bewilder us so much. These external things, not meaning I want to be a devotee and I don't want to enjoy the material life. That's not what this means. But trapped on the superficial platform of sense enjoyment, trapped by the objects of the senses, and I want this and I don't want that, you go crazy. The whole life is like that. It's like taking a... Have you ever been in a Toys R Us shop? Have you ever been in one? Never. Have you? You've been in one?
Yes.
What would happen if you brought like a 7-year-old child in there? Have you ever been in one?
Yes.
Toys R Us?
Yes.
Oh. Did you enjoy? When you were little. But a child goes mad in there. I want this, I want that, I want that, I want that. But you can't have everything you want, that even if you had it. Remember when we saw Mahesh, the little boy, what was his result? What happened to him? Did that Raju? But there's this one very wealthy young boy that we used to teach him many, many years ago about Krishna, and we got to, and his room was just shelves of all the toys and games he had. His walls were shelves.
Big room for everybody's toys.
Three
times as big as this.
10 times as big as this. Maybe 100 times as big. Toys everywhere. It was like kitty heaven, kitty swagaloka. But the poor boy was so frustrated. Just take down a toy. And you remember that? Because there was no, the pleasure that he, the promise of pleasure is there, the anticipation, but there is no fulfillment of it. Such torture. So this attachment and aversion bewilders us continuously on the material level. But a person who is free from this attachment and aversion and is focused within, and he's able to control his senses. He's not interested in what the material world can offer. And he can control his senses through the sadhana, the regulative principles, translated here, the regulative principles of freedom, because we don't like videya atma, the vidis that control. We want to do what we want to do. We don't want to be controlled by something external. But nicely translated here is the regular principles of freedom, because the control allows us to be free. And if we try to be free and uncontrolled, we become completely bound. So such a person can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So that's the answer to the question, how does he actually engage his senses? In a restrained way. Now the next question is, how does he walk? How does he actually engage his senses? That's the first question, answer to that. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, because that's what it takes, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer when one has the deep meditation on his relationship with Krishna. And in such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. One who is, on the other hand, if the mind and intelligence become deviated, turned from one's relationship with Krishna. Krishna explains, one who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can neither have transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Same point. As a strong wind sweeps away a boat in the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. So there's a warning. If you want to be focused within, you cannot simultaneously focus without on the objects of the senses. Therefore, O mighty armed, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence. What is night? So here's the two different types of person, the materialist and the devotee, how opposite they are. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. What is his enlivenment and pleasure, the self-realized soul, is completely opposite for those who are a materialist. It's night for him. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective soul. There's two kinds of people, and they are opposite, just like day and night. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires, let the desires come, that like they enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy those desires. So the desires come, but detachment due to the ability to focus one's mind and attain within and attain the higher taste of his relationship with Krishna. A person who gives up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. That is the way of the spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. Okay, we just finished the second chapter. Thank you. So many things talked about. Any questions or comments?
Question.
Yes.
How can you know when materialism lets you go?
One, ask the other question. Ask it the opposite way.
When he'll actually let you free.
But ask it the opposite way. How do you know?
How do you know when you're...
In Maya, under the control of the material energy. If you have to know, you have to know what it feels like to be in prison. And then you'll know what it feels like to be free. So what does it feel like to be in prison? In the prison of Maya. How do you know if you're in Maya? Because that will help you understand how you'll know if you're free from Maya. Follow what I mean? So how do you know if you're in Maya? What are the symptoms of someone under the control of the material energy? How does that? Yeah. What else? Anyone else? What does it feel like to be under the control of the material energy? Of course, none of you know. Only I know.
Lamentation.
Lamentation. What mode of material nature makes you feel lament?
Ignorance.
Ignorance. What else? What else is a symptom? Huh? Desires. So many desires are in the mind. For I want to enjoy this, I want to enjoy that. What mode of material nature fills us with desires? Passion. What other symptoms of the someone being in the material energy?
Hard to chant.
No taste for chanting Krishna's names. But taste for so many other things. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this. On a chant. I don't want to do that. Because I'm too busy. No time. What's another symptom of someone? I am. I am so many things, too many things, except not Krishna's servant. Huh? What does that? What does it mean to be affected by duality? No, but happiness and sadness come, but Sita Dimuni, he's not affected by them. His focus is so deep. So it means not to have a focus on Krishna. To have a focus on Krishna means if your consciousness is continuously only focused on pleasing Krishna, then there's no Maya there, because the sunlight of Krishna consciousness is there. But the symptom of Maya is we have so many other desires. Each of those, huh?
Well, being swept away by the boat, being swept away.
Yeah. Remember when the tsunami comes, not only the boats are swept away, but the cars are swept away, and the buses and the trucks. So when we're filled with desires, material desires, then the tsunami, it's like a tsunami, and it sweeps everything away. Does that answer your question?
How does that answer his question?
Huh?
How does that answer his question?
Who? Ask him. Because he was the one who said it answered his question,
how
not me.
How does it answer your question?
No. I thought of the tsunami. I don't know how to explain it.
That you know what Maya is, because the question was what? How do you know when you're free from Maya? Mm-hmm. So if you know what it feels like to be under the control of Maya, that, you know, I'm up and down, my mind is filled with so many desires for sense gratification, I think my body is me. What were some of the other things?
Desires.
So many desires. So when... Don't want to chant. So when you do want to chant, when you identify yourself with Krishna's servant and you're not disturbed by the ever-present flow of desires, etc., and your mind is filled with desires to please Krishna, then you're free from Maya. And you're always thinking about Krishna. Would you like to be free from Maya? You know who to ask? The master of Maya. You know who's the master of Maya? Yeah. Maya is the obedient servant of? Yeah. So if he wants, he can. So how to act in such a way that he'll want to just go like that. So Maya will go somewhere else and bother someone else.
Leave him alone.
And leave him alone. Leave me alone too. Why only him?
Because he wants to do something for your mind.
But sometimes we want to become free of Maya, but we want to enjoy Maya at the same time. This is a problem. We want to be free of the effects of Maya while playing with the energy. That sometimes happens.
What if you get an addiction?
Huh?
What if you get an addiction in Maya? You're addicted to something, and you can't give it up. Even though you're touching it and it's burning you, you can't give it up.
But there are ways, aren't there? I mean, just like if you have any addiction, there are ways, painful processes to stop it. What is they call? Yeah, there's so many ways to go cold turkey on Maya. Do you ever hear that expression, cold turkey? And they go to these rehab centers. So that's what the temples are like. At least they used to be like. rehab centers. You know, things do this now, and you do this, and you do this. And so many exalted souls, due to their sincerity and the strength of the rehab center, they were freed from their addictions.
Yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Huh?
Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a group. Group support association.
Yeah, need group support and association.
Alcoholics Anonymous, one of their processes is to pray to the Supreme.
Yeah.
It's a very vague, they don't know what the Supreme is, but they call for higher power to assist them to break their alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
And then the group association. So
yeah, they have a network.
Network.
And also they take a day at a time. They take it
in. The day suddenly associated with devotees and pray to the Supreme.
Yeah. And they also, part of their process is to have a sponsor, they call it. An old experienced fellow who can guide you through the tough times.
I know.
Like that. And they also don't talk about each other. That's why it's called anonymous. They're not allowed to talk about each other after.
Have we learned
something? All the devotees should just talk about it now. It is complete confidentiality in the meetings. Okay. Good night. Hare Krishna.